we'll see how we go.
Okay.
All right. So I'm doing an interview with Leah. Leah, are you comfortable sharing where you're from, or would you rather not
say where you're from? Yeah, sure. As in where I grew up?
Like where you're living at. No, like where you're living at. Where are you located?
So I'm in the Northern Rivers.
Slash New South Wales.
Somewhere between there. Yeah, New South Wales.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I love it here. I think especially in this climate of the current coronavirus, the idea of being in a city or trapped in an apartment block is just, oh, my goodness, beyond me.
Consider I don't know how they're doing it. I really wouldn't know how they're doing it.
Especially with children, like to live in a block of flats or something, whereas we still have so much freedom and so much beauty and such diversity here, which is something I really love compared to where I came from. And that's really appealing, yeah.
So where did you come from? What's your
I originally grew up in Foster Tuncurry, which is one of the most aesthetically beautiful places
it's
in
Australia.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's where the rivers meets the mountains, meets the oceans, and, you know, everyone flocks there for their holidays because it's so lovely. But I also found it very monocultural. So after traveling around the world for a few years and, you know, on a daily basis, getting a handle on multiple different languages and exposed to a lot of different cultures, coming back to Foster was just like, flatline personality and diversity, and I really struggled with that. It just was really eye-opening, whereas growing up I had no idea really. So Lismore, which I'm close to, is like that. It's like Central Station of Sydney, but probably more harmonious. You've got a lot of different walks of life, and there's a lot of the highest populations of different subcultures and sectors of society all congregate in this area, statistically speaking. So it makes it quite interesting. And then the surrounding areas beyond that are just beautiful places to live.
Absolutely. I agree. How long have you been in the Lismore area for?
10 years, actually. 10 years.
10 years, wow.
But my dad's originally from here.
That's
and
awesome.
My family's buried here. So there's always felt like, even though I hadn't lived here prior to this, somehow I have family heritage here.
So okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So you feel a sense of connection to the area.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. Although I think what drew me here first, the idea of being near Byron Bay, whereas now I can't stand that place and I don't go anywhere near it. Not what it used to be.
Yeah. All right. Tell me about your kids.
Oh, my children. There's one that's 7 and a 5.5, so 5.5-year-old.
Yep.
They're 18 months apart. I was always told I couldn't have children. Since my 20s, I was told to have a hysterectomy, and I just didn't bother listening, I think, and didn't really care. I always worked in welfare, so my background was always living with homeless kids and really giving my all to help those that didn't have much of a home life or stability. So, and I knew I couldn't do both. I think I was quite aware that I couldn't continue working at the level I was and have children. So I was quite okay with not having kids. And then I found myself in a situation where I was raising someone else's children anyway and requiring all my maternal instincts to raise someone else's babies. So that led me to a place of thinking, you know, actually what? I think I would like to have children. But those children were, how should I say, a lot more compliant and easygoing compared to those with my genetic makeup. So I threw myself my own spanner there. Yeah. But, so they're wild and full of life and very sensitive and very passionate and very stubborn and little walking mementos of myself.
And before we go into sort of like why you homeschooled and what your homeschooling looks like, do you mind if we go back to your schooling? Did you like what kind of schooling did you do? Was it public, private, or you homeschooled yourself, and did you like it?
I had a variety of experiences. I wasn't homeschooled. I wasn't even, don't think I even realized what homeschooling was till a few years ago. And not that you can put it in that kind of box. I had both public and private. I had both small and large, and I also went to boarding school. So I had quite a broad range of experiences when it comes to school.
Yeah.
I didn't have any problems with schooling. I'm sure if I applied myself, I would have done okay. I just couldn't be bothered. I wasn't bullied. I didn't have any negative experiences in regards to what school is. But at the same time, I've always been really aware that I didn't actually learn anything. It was just a juggling game of social politics for me, and always staying ahead of the game in that regard. I was always quite popular. I was friends with everyone. It wasn't a bad thing, but I don't actually see it as a necessarily positive and conducive environment. And the reason I came to that understanding is that after leaving school, prior to having my own children, I worked in high schools. I actually wrote and implemented care programs as a preventative measure for kids ending up on the streets.
Mm.
And I could see that there's just not a great capacity to care for everyone. There's a very small percentage of people who I think can thrive, and that really depends on if the luck of the draw or they can tick all those boxes. You know, if they come from a stable home, if they've got a good constitution, if they an audio learner, if they get along with that teacher, if they've, you know, had a good meal, if they've got good friends, if, you know, their home life is stable. Like, unless you can tick off all those things, just even the basics, that there's different learning styles. And I've always been a tactile learner. So I was quite good at maths and quite capable of doing advanced maths, but I chose to do the lowest level of mathematics in high school for year 11 and 12 in favor of being able to do art and textiles.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily that I considered myself an artistic person, but I'm a tactile learner. So being able to use my hands to learn and to be interactive with the lessons was what suited me best. And they were the only subjects that provided that. So yet society marks, you know, if you did a chemistry major, significantly high as opposed to doing textiles. But if you took a chem major and asked them to produce a major work on, you know, historical influences in fashion, like, they're going to have just as much idea as the other way around. But obviously one's graded a lot higher than the other. So
it wants to get you into uni. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was no understanding that it's just really geared towards one learning type and everything is catered around that. And then you've got to be able to tick off all the other boxes, if home life as well. And so my perspective was never, my desire to homeschool didn't come from a long yearning or consideration, but it wasn't a hard leap when I looked at it, knowing what I knew about the schooling system, that I felt sorry for teachers. I believe teachers should be considered with as much value and pay packet to reflect as much as a doctor. I honestly do. I think people who are in charge of inspiring our children in whatever capacity, that are going to take over our future and be our future leaders and entrepreneurs, then they should be given so much more credit, time and money and value and respect than they are. And having worked in high schools for, you know, 6-7 years, it just looked like a war zone. You know, it was a battle against curriculum and protocol and paperwork and kids hurting, and they're all thrown into this concrete mix. That's the schools I worked in were actually designed by the same people who designed jails, and that spoke volumes to me. It was a very uninspiring environment. And yeah, and a lot of them are. So even just to look at it, it's like, wow, how is that
any different? It certainly felt like it. Didn't feel like high school, did feel like. And I've never been in a jail, so that's probably pretty unfair to make that comparison. But it did, like, as a teenager, all you wanted was wide open spaces and freedom, and just you wanted to be creative and be outside challenging yourself, not in a classroom, battling, you know. It was more of a social battle than academic,
absolutely. I think. And so if you think back and you reflect into, I'm talking high school more so than primary school, but how many people in that classroom were actually listening or engaging or being inspired by what was happening? Or was it just getting in trouble, enforcing, memorizing, regurgitating and forgetting? You know, there was, sure, there was a few that did, but I would say it's a minority, not the majority.
I would say, based like just talking about feelings more than memories, fear was more present an emotion than inspiration.
Yeah.
Fear of the teachers, fear of classmates, fear of girls, fear of boys, fear of the principal, fear of everything. Fear of my clothes, fear of the way I looked, fear of the way I smelled from walking to school on a hot summer day. Fear of my armpits all sweaty, fear of the tight, stupid uniforms, fear of is my backpack cool enough, fear of am I going to have enough to eat or is my lunch too weird, fear of being things stolen from you when you're in line at the canteen, fear of making a mistake in class, and, you know, just fear, just so much fear.
And then you've got the teachers who are battling the same kind, you know, because they're getting in trouble for not achieving enough or not performing enough or not doing enough or not being able to control a class when, you know, they've got kids in there that are coming from domestic violence or, you know. So that's why I said it felt like a war zone. I didn't feel like anyone was winning. That's how it felt to me.
No, just progressing.
As an adult working in high school. That's not me as a child. This is as an adult with eyes wide open working in state high schools. It didn't feel like anyone was winning.
Just kind of trudging along to the next level, right?
Well, there was just too much conflict of, you know, I think back to when my parents would have been at school, for example. You know, they often talk about how long they used to have to walk for, and you know, that was seems to be a big thing. But teachers were respected and revered.
Because they could hit you.
Well, I don't think just that. I mean, we come from a day and age where parents were probably respected a lot more than they are today too. But there weren't as many philosophies on parenting, for example. So when I was growing up, I think you could go to anyone else's house or vice versa, and there was a general understanding. There may be few exceptions to this case, but in my experience, there was general understanding that most families ran pretty similar. You know, it wasn't too far from the median line of how values and morals and manners were represented in most houses. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a pretty small window of movement between the disparity of how different families operated.
Not in my family growing up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was raised in a really orthodox religious home where you couldn't even drink Coke.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
And you couldn't watch TV on a Sunday. But in other people's homes, it was like junk food galore. Do what you want. And there you'd find like stashes of pornography around the place. So like it was very, very different, like my friends and my home. So
see, I guess I had all those experiences too. But to me, compared to what it is now, that was quite a small window.
But you're talking about parenting, not like homes. Homes are different, but you're right. Like, you sort of knew, being socialized in the culture, it was all going to be similar. You knew there was going to be sort of the same rules no matter where you went. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Whereas now, I mean, you have a kid's birthday party, and if they're fighting, you can't say, well, hold on, it's someone else's turn. Or hold on, you need to wait. Or hold on, we're sharing. Because there's so much staunch philosophies on such diverse parenting styles that, you know, kids aren't being told no, or they've never been made to share, or they don't have to apologize. And, you know, that changes the dynamics in schools too. Like, whereas once upon a time you'd assume that most kids would have a healthy plate of vegetables, that they've had a good night's sleep, that you know, that they do their homework, that there's A, B and C are being met, whereas now none of those rules apply, none of them. And so what you're seeing come into the school or in home life or even within the homeschooling community, there can be no assumptions. And so the dynamics of what's expected of a teacher to manage a classroom, seriously, I don't have any answers for how that can be done any differently. But
not with 30 kids, not with 25 to 30 kids. I don't know how they do it, honestly. And I think that's one important thing that this COVID has taught us with people homeschooling their kids that have never done it before. Mm. They're like, a much greater respect and admiration for teachers who have to handle 20, 25, 30 kids.
Yeah, but I see the two as so different. Like, I don't see what people are doing now in COVID as homeschooling. You know, they're still being dictated to as to what to do, and that's why it's hard for them. Like, I think as a homeschooling parent, I've seen such a broad range of how things are done. And most people will say if you're going straight from the schooling system to homeschooling, you need a period of de-schooling.
Yeah.
And de-schooling is deconstructing what we perceive as expected or what school should look like. And so all these people who are finding themselves in a shocking situation where they've gone from sending their kids to school every day, possibly have never spent so much time with their children before, but they're also still having to meet expectations that someone else is putting on them who has different kind of training, different understanding, different dynamics, who are set up in a classroom environment with their peers and the children's peers around, to enforcing that at home, that's hard work to me. I have no desire to do that. My day's worked around what works for us, and how that fits best, not following someone else's program or agenda. Like the little girl next door, she's only 5 and she has 3 sit down sessions a day with a dad who's working, who her mum's an essential worker. And every minute of her day is accounted for. And that makes me really sad.
She's 5.
Yeah. So, you know, my child is also 5 and he has the same skills and possibly a lot more in different areas, but we don't do that. So we just do it differently.
So before we jump into what your homeschooling day kind of looks like, can we talk about your decision to homeschool? Like when and how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. So I had no notion of homeschooling. I saw my 2 bonus children go through schooling. Stepchildren, technically. But they never felt like stepchildren because I raised them equally as from babies 50% of the time. So I saw them go through the whole preschool and schooling system. And well, they still are. They're both in high school now. I saw a disconnect that happens when you start school because you go from being their sole or, you know, the significant part in their lives that they connect with and relate to all of a sudden their major point of reference are all these other children. All these other children who, one, may not be necessarily the most advantageous influences you'd like for your children. But I didn't have any major opinion on it. As I said, they were very cruisy, very easygoing children, still are. I always say they were false advertisement because my own experience has not been like that at all. But as I said, I was always told I couldn't have children. So I'd never really given it a whole lot of thought. And then when my children were babies, I was running a bulk food co-op, a health food co-op. And throughout that co-op, I got to know a lot of homeschooling families because there were a lot of large families particularly using a co-op. But then they started advertising the co-op to other homeschooling families. So all of a sudden I was front row position to see how all these homeschooling families operated. There was such a diverse range in how it happened, which I found quite appealing, but also challenged my sense of what school should look like. But I also really admired how these children weren't, I can't think of the word, but they were actually quite well presented and capable of talking to adults. Whereas often
which goes against the homeschooling sort of anecdote, isn't it, of really weird, you know, socially isolated children.
But when you consider what's normal is you go to someone's house and their teenagers are stuck on their screens and don't want to talk to adults. So I wonder how much of that comes from this, you know, abnormal perception of what is normal. The same as when people say, you know, homeschooling is it's a social disadvantage, shall we say. Whereas having worked in schools and my background is welfare, I would say with the increase of suicide, depression, anxiety, and mental health issues, why hasn't anyone questioned the social advantages of school? And why is it painted that that is the best way to be? Whereas my main motivation, when I went through all the different aspects, when I looked at the pros and the cons, especially as a single parent, and I have a physical disability that leaves me extremely exhausted all day, every day. I'm also working because I get no child support. When I still consider all the pros and cons, my main motivation is their emotional and mental well-being. I believe that academics can always happen, and it can happen really easily when a child is mentally and emotionally well. And I think when they're developing all their core belief systems about who they are, who, where they fit in the world, how they view their self-esteem and the people around them, all those things are developed in the first 7 years of your life. Now, you throw a kid into a school at 4 or 5 when they're still highly influential in the core belief systems that's going to shape their whole life, and we're leaving that up to a bunch of strangers to fight over, and those children just to figure it out based on how those dynamics roll out. You know, I did try school for a little while with my 5-year-old, and I remember her one day crying before school going, I can't wear that. I'll look like an idiot. And she was so distraught. And I'm like, but it's a uniform and everyone's wearing it. I didn't understand it. But the light bulb moment of that, her sense of self was coming from a bunch of other kids who are all feeling really insecure in a situation that's really foreign to them. And do I place any value on those children and their home life and how they're shaping my child's life? And so education, you look at a lot of different forms of education, even the Scandinavian model where they don't actually start school till 8. And, you know, there's no mistake in understanding that that's when their core belief system is already established. So if a child can, even if my children do go to school one day, the idea that they could already be secure in who they are, as opposed to having that shaped by, my children see kids every day, well, prior to the COVID, we'd have children over, we were out in groups and games, and I'm a very social person, so they were not socially isolated whatsoever, and I've met very few homeschooling families that do that, and largely that comes down to the parents' insecurities, I think. My children aren't socially isolated whatsoever, but they have a sense of who they are within that dynamic, and there is still diversity in our friends, but my 7-year-old's daughter's choice and favourite song is not the latest fad, which is what you see with school kids.
Right.
They're all into the same song because it's the latest movie that's come out and they're all buying the merchandise. My daughter's favorite song is this rock violinist who does this cowboy dance, and I think it's so cool because she's not being shaped by external influences that have no impact on her long-term being.
I love that.
She's free to figure out who she is. And even if she goes to school later, my hope is that that is concrete before anything else, because you can always learn. You can always, if I'm behind, this isn't saying if I'm behind, I don't believe I really am. But if, when I consider what the things that are most important are, my 5-year-old mows the lawn. He cooks breakfast and dinner. He has a drill and he can fix things around the house. But he is also learning to read and write. You know, but I guess I look back on how many things I learned at school, not many things I did, but the things I did, do they have much impact on my life today? And I hope that my kids are secure enough to be able to have solid foundations to move forward. And that's what I didn't have growing up in school. And I do have a university education.
I don't know, Stevie.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's given me a lot of the way that you put things is very professional, but it also is very, just it feels, I'm very biased because I love homeschooling, but it just makes sense. Everything just makes sense. And whenever people, you hear on social media, people say, oh, homeschooling is not good for them, or if I hear friends who've gone to psychologists and they say, oh, they're not pro homeschooling because they don't think it's good for the child, I say, show me the data. Where do we have longitudinal studies showing the mental health outcomes of these kids who have been homeschooled? We don't. We don't have any data. So
that's, whereas we have a society full of evidence of the long-term studies of kids in school.
It also depends on what you determine as success as well. So
yeah. And that's where I think I'm coming from. You know, I come from a very conservative, well-to-do, financially high-ranking family. And we all went to very exclusive boarding schools, surrounded by the who's who. And I daily consider and am very intentional about what I consider important in my children's lives. And it's not, they're not flippant decisions. Some days you're just getting through, but it's all very intentional. And I don't like necessarily what I can see in a lot of schools. It's not that I'm anti them. I believe they could do, they're probably doing the best that they can, but it's an institution that was created in the industrial age to pump out robots to work in factories. Today is not that period. We are not in that same era. We need children who can think for themselves, who know how to create out of boredom, who know how to question what's given to them rather than just regurgitate what they're told.
Yeah. And some would say, well, what, you know, you're taking the choice away from them to get a, you know, a normal education. What if they want to go to university later? And they can. Like, we're so lucky in Australia that there's so many different pathways to university, not just mainstream schooling.
Absolutely. And, you know, I went to university and I was just there to party, really. I didn't learn anything. You know, being that career path of going to school and going to university, it was just a rite of passage as much as it was an intentional learning opportunity. Whereas, you know, I see a lot of homeschoolers getting set up for university a lot longer because they know what they're interested in, they're following their passions. And I recommend that most people shouldn't go straight to university from school.
No, I don't want my kids to. I want them to go travel and do jobs and just experience life, because I really don't think you know what you want to do at 18 years old.
And you're locking yourself into something for life.
And a huge debt as well.
Absolutely. But, there is no holding anyone back from those opportunities. We are fortunate to live in a time, and, I mean, I would say even this year alone, there's been an exponential growth in this first term of homeschooling families just in this region. It's crazy trying to keep up with it. We're not short of opportunities. That is for sure.
Okay, so we're almost 30 minutes in. Can you tell me what taking into account your health and your parenting sort of status, what does your typical day or week look like?
It feels like 5 weeks in isolation. I have to work hard to remember what life was like.
Right. Okay. True. Yeah. What does it look like now? And then maybe we can remember.
Don't ask that. At the moment, I just took my hands off the wheel, to be honest, since this coronavirus, and largely because I recognized that a lot of the activities we did, we generally only home maybe 1-2 days a week, and every other day we were out engaging with other people or classes or activities. And when we went into lockdown, we went earlier, admittedly, because I was concerned for my mother. Yeah. I didn't want to jeopardize her and our ability to see her, but I recognized early on how much I rely on all the other things that we do. You know, people think of homeschooling and they're thinking of a parent sitting there slogging it out at the table all day. That's never really been us. But I recognize that how much I do rely on those interactions with other people and other teachers and classes and groups that we have going on. So all of a sudden when they were taken away, I was like, oh, there's a lot more. I need to do a lot more than I was before. But I'm working hard on just being gracious. You know, I spoke to a lady down at the Oval next door to us the other day who was struggling with it. She had a daughter in year six and a boy in year one, I think, and she was trying to work from home and she was trying to do it all. And then she was like, oh, school holidays, we don't have to do anything. And I said, you know what, you're actually better off trying to continue doing a little bit right now, whether it's your work or school work, and figure out what works for you so that when the school term comes back, it's not so all-inclusive and intense. So I would normally aim to do, I always keep my, check the boxes as far as English and maths. We have some workbooks because I think as much as I am aware that they do learn, and I'm constantly being challenged and fascinated by different articles or philosophies that I read, how they learn in so many different ways. And sometimes I can go for a period and not necessarily sit down and do any reading with my daughter. And then when she does read, I realize she's actually gone ahead in leaps and bounds, even without me intentionally doing it. But I do believe that in a society that has standards, that I do expect them to sit down and do some book work as far as reading and maths. And the curriculum for that changes. But essentially from the Department of Education, we're given a set of curriculum outcomes. And you can go any way about reaching those. You just have to be reaching them, essentially.
And what curriculum are you into these days? Like, what do you use to help you?
At the moment, someone recommended to me, and we've been using Fitzroy Readers, which is really good because it comes with readers that they can learn. I'm finding that I'm starting the younger one on Reading Eggs because that's a platform he was already familiar with. Excuse me.
But for people who don't know what readers are just books.
Yeah, so in the stages, the level of stages so to help you reading. Same as when you send a child to school in kindergarten, they give you readers to take home and they do them in school.
Yeah.
But Fitzroy Readers, that the English book, for example, that comes with my daughter who's seven, that has a workbook that goes with the readers. So it's largely just the comprehension of what they're coming out from that. So they include the phonics and the spelling and the comprehension out of the book that they're working on. And then they have maths as well.
That sounds great.
And you can actually look online. It comes from a community school, Fitzroy in Melbourne, and this is where I heard from it from another homeschooling family, that you can go online and you can actually look at kind of quizzes to tell what level your child's at.
Oh, wow, cool. And
which books you need.
And so where did you get that from? Like, is it the FITS program? Is it fitsprog.com.au? Is it?
No, it's Fitzroy.
I think the website is FITSPROG.
I'm not sure. You can probably put a link. I can look it up later and you can put a link on your.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome. That's great.
We have a inspiration room, for example, and it has a lot of curriculum, it has a lot of science experiments, it has a lot of resources, it has a lot of books, we have a lot of tools. So therefore, often when, for example, when I do take my hands off the wheel, because I have to be able to, with my limited energy, I still need to be able to cook and clean and work within the time frame of my children learning. So sometimes it could be that their play results in them finding something else within the resources I've provided, and then we work on that. There can be questions. I don't believe school goes 9 to 3, 5 days a week, 10 days a term. And so by not working 9 to 3, 5 days a week, at, 6 o'clock this morning, we were looking up an engineering video on making marble runs as something that we were going to do today. And then you can carry on from that. So I would say there's touches of unschooling, but I also believe in curriculum. Therefore, I would be described as a relaxed homeschooler, I believe. So I see that playing games has learning opportunities, but I still believe in them being able to be within the ballpark if they wanted to choose school, that they wouldn't be at a loss. Does that make sense? But I do believe in... if you work in a moment where a child is engaged and interested and inspired, and fed and happy and all those things, then what they learn is exponentially greater than anything they're going to learn of 10 hours being beaten over the head by repetition of a teacher that they just need to regurgitate.
In terms of inspiration and loving what they're learning, do you, because that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because I thought for the first, how long have I been homeschooling for? Oh my gosh, like 4 years. I thought that I could create it, and I'm coming to realize that I can't create it. It seems to me like the inspiration and love of what they're learning comes from them. It comes from seeing what they're doing in between the maths and English. Like, okay, go play, go have a break before maths. And then they're going and, you know, my daughter's doing a 15-day makeup challenge. Like every day she has to come up with something, a different style of makeup.
Yeah.
And I thought I could create it. I thought if I made fun enough, or if I made history interesting enough. And I can't. I think it just comes from them.
Absolutely. But I do find, and I did a post just recently, because I actually feel quite passionate about advocating for homeschooling. I know you're not on Facebook, but if you were to see my Instagram or Facebook posts, I'm often posting things because I want people to change their view on necessarily what homeschooling has to look like. Because a lot of people say, oh, I couldn't do that. I'm like, well, you can actually. I'm not a teacher. I'm a facilitator. So often, and I did this post recently when this all started and people were panicking on how to fill their days, I'll grab an idea, like you're saying, like I think it's really inspiring, but I let go of the outcomes. But I might see an idea, like we were doing this thing on mixing primary colours and creating an engineering water wheel run thing. And so I'll set something up and I'll engage with it for a little while and then watch them take it to a different level.
Mm.
And I find that can work. Sometimes it can go on for hours and then they go from one thing to another to another. And sometimes it's just setting that platform or providing the environment, facilitating a thought, and then seeing what they pick up on. And that can change. But I think a big part of homeschooling is letting go of what you think the outcome should look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, oh, no, you can't do that because I can't check it off anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas I generally find anything I do, I can create into a check-off box. You know, I see it the other way around.
Yeah, and I'm very hard on myself. I'm trying to get better at being more relaxed with not checking off the boxes, because anecdotally the NESA representative here up in the Northern Rivers is very relaxed, thank goodness, because my 7-year-old still cannot fully read and write.
Mm.
Whereas my 10-year-old, she was reading and writing at 5 years old. So I'm sort of like, well, your sister did this, so you need to do this. Yet,
and that I find is the beauty of homeschooling, is that if they were in school, they would be made to feel
shamed. Yeah, absolutely shamed.
Yeah. And I mean, from my experience, I was quite conscious of this in school, and when my early years in working in welfare and with homeless kids, that I would say, and I haven't done the studies on this, but just from my assumption and experience, that there's a considerable amount of people in jail or detention centres who were made to feel stupid because they didn't fit that little box paradigm of what the education system was created to be. Therefore, they were made to feel stupid. Therefore, they acted out. They were frustrated. And then that becomes a long string of other incidences. Like, I'm not talking about being responsible for your actions, and there's a lot of other components going on there. But when a child is made to feel stupid in front of their peers, which really develops and shapes their identity, then that creates other problems. But if you're able to go at their pace, like I said, my 5-year-old, until 2 months ago, I wasn't sitting down doing book work with him. You know, he's a boy. We lived on a farm. He was free to create and develop. And, you know, you see him at a playground compared to other 5-year-old boys, And he runs rims around them in a lot of personal development ways. But right now we've started because the time is right and he's loving it. He's soaking it up and he's absorbing it and he can't get enough of it. But having the freedom to see and recognize how each child is unique and different is, I would say, just one of the many benefits of homeschooling.
Yep.
But honestly, I have a lot of reasons why, I think. Their emotional well-being. As a single parent, even though people say that's the hardest and silliest thing, why would I homeschool? Because I never get a break. I don't have any opportunities to do things for myself. And they are young. I appreciate that. However, I would say as a single parent, I am fully aware of the statistical disadvantage that they would hold in going to a local state school, especially because of my position. I can't afford to pick and choose which educational environment they could go to. And my background in welfare, I'm always conscious of that. And that a foundation in them is imperative so that they wouldn't get lost in the system.
But Leah, doesn't that mean that you have to sacrifice a lot of things for you so that they can have sort of that more, you know, personalised education?
I do think like that a lot, but I would say that I have a couple of different approaches to that. Being that my main, you know, thoughts and concerns is how that would play out later in life, this is probably the best investment I could make that I could never regret. Do you know what I mean? I see, you know, when my daughter did go to school and she was struggling a bit with anxiety and she was upset a lot, it created so much stress in our life that our whole life became about saying no. No, you can't play because you've got to do homework. No, you can't do this because you've got to go to bed, because you've got to get up, because you've got to go to school. No, you've got to stop crying. You've got to go. No, I have to leave you even though you're really distressed. And that created more problems in our family and in all our mental health, I would say, trying to conform to something that wasn't really fitting. But I would also say that, you know, I had other mothers at the time saying, oh, just keep pushing through, they'll be okay, they'll get over it, they'll stop crying. I see a lot of those parents, their teenagers are, you know, anorexic or cutting or, you know, running away from home. And not to say that that's the only reason, but I don't have the same value on my children fitting into a box and me going out drinking with friends on a weekend as I do for their emotional well-being in the long term. And that's something, coming from someone who was that lost child, who did do a lot of damage to myself with bad choices, that's not something I'm willing to compromise on. So I don't see that as a sacrifice. I see it as an investment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it is a sacrifice for you, obviously, like as a single parent, you are with your kids all the time. So what sort of self-care do you have in place so to make sure that you don't go crazy and are shouting at the kids and are irritable? What sort of self-care do you do?
I wouldn't say I don't shout at the kids or get irritable.
As much as you would if you didn't have self-care. How about that?
What I would say, and this is, you know, when parents say, oh, I could never be with my kids all day, I need a break. I would say that by being with them all the time and doing life together, you don't need as much of a break. Because you understand each other, you respect each other, and you bring all the other expectations down. So we have rest time every day. There's a couple of hours in the middle of the day where, you know, I can tune out and watch a movie if I want. I'm listening to podcasts. I can read. I can rest. And that's something that is non-negotiable in my life. But I would also say that when, for example, they'd go to school, when they'd come home, there was much greater needs. There was much bigger feelings. There was much greater need to connect. There was much more required from me, if that makes – it's hard to picture, but having them home, and the flow of our day works in harmony, you know, we're not waking up stressed. We'll wake up, they come into my room, we snuggle, we play. My little one really likes to do a lot of role playing, like he'll pretend to be a puppy or a cat or something. And that really fills their cup. And then emotionally, they're a lot more capable to go off and do something else while I then clean up or get breakfast ready or they cook breakfast or whatever it is. And so because they're not, we're not waking up going bang, alarm, stress, lunches, get out the door, shoes, blah, blah, blah. It's easier on everyone and there's less need. Less need from them and less need to be away. And that is hard to comprehend because, sure, I would still love opportunities to go do other things, but it's actually easier being at home than it was sending them to school.
Yeah.
For that very reason, because they don't feel disconnected. They don't require as much from me, even though they might be in the same vicinity as me most of the day. And that really comes down to being conscious of connecting. You know, if I'm having a few hard days with my health where I really can't do much, there are tools that I've learned of things that I can do where I can be close with them and satisfying needs of theirs. But they're also a lot more self-sufficient because they homeschool.
I also find that you can take days off when you need to for our own health, not because the kids are sick, but for our own health. And I find that my kids are a lot less sick than they were when they were in school because there's a lot of germs flowing around and catching colds and things like that, and we don't have any sick days. Like, my kids are very rarely sick. It's more me who needs a mental health day or two. And we can take those off. And I think it's healthy for them to see their parents vulnerable and to say, hey, what can I do to ease their burden right now and go look after myself? You know, go find something to do. Because I don't know about you, but growing up, I never saw my parents vulnerable.
And I think we can see now in this current situation of COVID-19 that, you know, a lot of people are recognizing that all they really needed in life was to slow down.
Yes.
You know, how many people get to their end of the life and say, I wish I did spend more time with my kids. I wish I stopped to smell the roses more. I wish I didn't work as much as I did. I wish. I don't think I could think any of those things. I don't think I could get to the end of this season, and I don't know how long homeschooling will go for us. But I'm not going to have those regrets, you know. We do smell the roses every day, metaphorically speaking. We do enjoy our life together. We don't need to take a break from our life because our life is something that to be enjoyed. And we get to enjoy that and learn together. And to be honest, I'm learning things now that I should have learned at school that I didn't learn at school. You know. And sure, don't get me wrong, it can be hard. I can be exhausted. I can want my children to go somewhere else and so I can hide in my room some days. But we figure it out. And, you know, having grown up at boarding school, my family have nothing to do with each other because we didn't grow up with each other. I would say that ideally we'll have a different experience with that with my children.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything and more. A lot. Is it? What advice would you give to somebody who's considering homeschooling but is kind of really scared about it? Say, from your perspective as a single parent with health, ongoing chronic health problems, what advice would you give to someone who really would like to try it but is very scared about those extra things?
I would say write down what you're scared about. really explore what those things are, because often I've found people's reasons, what's preventing them from going there, really aren't founded in anything substantial. And talking to a few homeschooling families will dispel a lot of those myths that are holding us back to start with. I would also say meet some other families, not just one, a few, because everyone does do it differently. And the strength that I found, and I was really fortunate and blessed to be able to experience a lot of different means of going around that, that I could see that it's not just one way. It's not just one shoe fits all. And that there's a variety, and also in a time when there are so many resources available, but you can always go back if you really give it a go and decide it's not for you. You can always go back to school.
Yeah.
But there is so much richness, and there's so many opportunities, and there's so much freedom and gifts to be found in it, as long as you let go of what you think it might have to look like. Be willing to be a bit flexible, experiment with different notions, and just remember it's not creating school at home. It's doing life with your children and learning along the way. So even right now, I do need to go because it's been an hour and my kids have had enough of it. But while I'm talking to you, my daughter's been learning spelling along the side when she keeps saying, stop talking now. And we're working on our spelling.
Yay.
Because she's doing well by trying not to interrupt me.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Leah.
All right, Charmaine.